The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Everyone keeps saying my last name wrong. It's Billy Quarantillo. Get used to saying that. It says, get these wins, baby. Let's go.
Billy Quarantillo, Billy Q. It don't matter what you call him. He gets the job done.
Oh, tap from Elliott.
There it is.
Welcome to the UFC, Brandon Royval.
Fighting out of Englewood, Colorado. Here is Brandon Royval.
Welcome to what we hope is a good episode of UFC Unfiltered. Matt and I are, like the rest of you in the world, in remote locations. We have Brandon Royval on the show today. And we also have, I think for the first time as well, Billy Quarantillo is coming on after a very impressive win over Spike Carlisle. That was a really close fight.
I'm sorry.
It was insane, that fucking fight.
That was a fucking insane fight. You know I love jiu-jitsu, Jimmy.
Yeah, yes, you do.
I was enjoying the everything. From the near submissions to the reversals.
How impressed were you with Spike? Like, he literally had these amazing bursts, like you said, reversal. How incredible was that to watch how good he was at getting out of things? But it looked like he was really close to being submitted quite a few times.
Hey, man, can I be honest? I think his ginger corn rolls help him with those triangles.
Sliding out.
I was
like that.
Watching it. I'm like, yo.
Yeah,
he slid out. A bald head like mine. And it was, Jimmy, I know there's no, if the people listening in their cars, I apologize. But right now we see each other.
Yes.
And I know you see me flexing a lot.
You are flexing a lot.
But
yes.
The reason, it's not about me being vain.
No.
Do you see what I'm wearing? Could you read this?
It says, I wish this was my chair, and it's a fist. That's kind of disgusting, man.
It doesn't say that, Jimmy.
No, it doesn't.
Don't mislead him.
Oh, is that, it says Fight and, Island. You know
come
what?
Come on, man.
Is that a UFC shirt?
And it's, listen to me.
How did you get one?
You didn't get one?
I didn't get one.
They sent them to me, Jimmy.
I didn't get one.
Man, I'm not saying who they like more, the higher ups. I am close with Dana, but
Dana likes me. Like, Dana, you're closer, but he likes me enough to get me a t-short.
Jimmy.
What?
Look how comfortable. Why I do this is because I feel.
Let me see.
Like it's so comfortable.
Let me
I
see
wish
it.
I could be here and feel it.
Can this I see it?
Forever. They give me a few.
I like it. Fight Island on the UFC. That's awesome.
And no, it looks badass and it's comfortable. Okay, no. Listen, I'm not trying to sell these things. It's just comfortable, and you see me flexing a lot, and only because I do look powerful.
You do look very powerful in that shirt. I have a big baggy. Then again, I just ate a sandwich with cheese on it. So maybe it wouldn't be good time for me to have a Fight Island. That's a great fucking shirt.
Is that Kurt Cobain on your shirt?
No.
Oh, who is it? Oh, who is
Ozzy
it?
Ozzy Osbourne, you goose.
Oh, I only said it.
Kurt Cobain. Shame on you.
Oh, I'm lightheaded, Jimmy. I only see the top of the head, though. That's why.
Yeah. So anyway, you have a very nice shirt. And I have a bone to pick with the UFC that I was not sent one.
Listen, I enjoyed those fights. Freaking awesome. They were awesome. And I can't wait to get into talking about all of them. But
yes.
Tim Elliott, we're going to talk to Royval later on.
Yep.
And that was his debut.
Yep.
I'm getting my notes right now. So I'm on. But Tim Elliott, that pace of that fight was so amazing. And that fight with the jiu-jitsu, oh, my goodness, man. There were so many things done right by this kid. And Tim Elliott, he almost did a Tim Elliott to Tim Elliott. Because Tim Elliott, I think he calls himself Awkward MMA. Did you hear that?
No, I did not.
Oh, 100%. Well, I was just listening to it. I was just watching it. And he calls his style Awkward MMA. And I'm trying to get the fucking notes. You know, it's so annoying. You guys might have to start texting me this shit. Because I'm not good, Jimmy, at my fuck. Oh, here we go. I'm sorry, Antonio. Attacking the guy. It's my fault. The other guy, and this is what I like about Roybal, is Brandon Roybal. He said something like he has like ADD, MMA or something. Like he's like in the moment. So I could relate with this with this kid.
You could.
And I want to know when he started jiu-jitsu. And he put out Tim Elliott away with an arm triangle. Is pretty impressive in your UFC debut. And you know what was really wild to me is the kid was upset after the fight.
And with his performance. Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
He's upset and he submitted Tim Elliott. I just think it was so emotional for him and he's probably so happy. And in a fight like that, a lot of times in a fight, even that you win, you think about like the worst moments of your fight.
Yep.
They stick out in your head. You know what I mean? So maybe I'm going to ask him if he went back and he watched it. And if he feels differently now, because
I understand that. Yeah. I'm like that after a show. Like I'll think of like of the worst moment. Like, and normally it's like the moment I step on stage until the moment I leave, I'll just think of what a disaster the whole thing was. But yeah, you always pick out that, but how good you do. You always pick out that one shitty thing, or I guess that's the sign of a perfectionist in a way, but you also don't want to not enjoy your a win over such a great fighter and in such an impressive way. You know, but I guess that's what makes this guy a good fighter.
And he's a young kid. He was saying how he had to go to work. He had to go to work tomorrow. You know? So I mean, it's funny, like he keeps fighting like that. I don't think he's gonna have to worry about a day job, Jimmy.
Now Matt, can we also discuss before we get Brandon or Billy on the phone, we should discuss we are both wrong in our picks. But Tyron Woodley and I has had 10 straight bad rounds in the UFC. And for a fighter, and I don't even remember the Damian Maia fight, he won. But I mean, he was heavily criticized after that. I don't remember what the final rounds were, what the final score, if that was a 50-45 win for him, I don't remember. But something happened to Woodley, and my opinion is that he is just kind of hanging back, waiting for the moment to throw the one knockout punch. Kind of the way Roy Nelson was doing and Henderson. It's not to criticize these guys, but just, you know, like it must feel good just to hit somebody and be able to knock them out. But it's really, I think, hurting him. And in between rounds, he looked lost. And yeah. I would say frightened, but not frightened. I don't think he's frightened of being hit. I don't think he's frightened of being hurt. It's almost like I'm lost. There was something in his eyes that looked very vacant in between the first and second round.
Can I tell you what I seen after that first round? And it was a hell of a round to even weather. I mean, he was almost taken out.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yep.
I hate to say it, but I feel like I saw a discouraged Tyron Woodley after that first round. Like, ah, shit, this is a nightmare. And I'm thinking, man, he's got, you know, that's the first round. Yeah. So the fact that he lasted, you know what I mean? And that fight and he was able to make it through Gilbert. But, you know, I mean, it's so strange though, because everybody's saying, man, Tyron didn't look like himself, or maybe he's slipping. Maybe, his best days are gone. But what about Gilbert Burns, man? Some of it might have been. I mean, you could put a little bit on Tyron not looking like Tyron, but a lot has to be put on Gilbert Burns doing what it needed to be done, and the way he put it together from the striking. What about the beautiful takedown, the timing on that takedown?
Amazing.
It was just he's so well-rounded, and he's putting it all together so nicely now that I thought that Tyron was going to be like the bigger guy, because Gilbert used to fight at 155. Gilbert looked like the bigger guy. I'm like, maybe it's just at weigh-ins. Maybe after he fuels up, he's going to be. And I don't know. This is the thing. Tyron is 38.
Yeah.
And he's always been a very athletic fighter. Like, a lot is based on his explosiveness,
yeah,
power. when that starts to fade, even a little bit, maybe his all-time explosiveness is when he's on 10. Maybe now he's down to a 7.
Yeah.
That could make a difference in these
in
the top of the top, with the top of the top fighters. You know what I mean?
It does make a difference. And, you know, the reason I'm putting it more on him, and it's not taking anything away, Burns was incredible, is because it's 10 straight rounds. Between Usman and between Gilbert Burns, I mean, Tyron Woodley is the number one ranked welterweight. I mean, he's a world-class fighter. And for him to have 10 straight lost rounds, fairly badly lost rounds, is what makes me think there's something going on with him as well. It's just, I don't know what happens. Maybe you're right. Maybe it just is against the top talent. You lose that one step, and it's very impossible to recover. I don't know. But it was surprising to see him so hesitant and just so – he just didn't look like himself at all.
I thought because he was going to be fighting Leon Edwards – and Tyron's no dummy. He knows how dangerous right. Leon Edwards is. So the fact that he was getting ready for him, and then all of a sudden now it switched around. He's fighting Gilbert Burns. When I say similar fighters, they're both very well rounded, and I'd say they're similar in a sense. They're dangerous with very dangerous with striking, good wrestling, good jujitsu. Gilbert obviously I think is better jujitsu, but
yeah,
I mean they're similar fighters compared to going from fighting Damian Maia to fighting a guy like Tyron Woodley. So I thought that was to Tyron's advantage. And then we talked to Mike Swick, and Mike Swick was saying how he's over there in Thailand and he's training hard, he's looking great. And
yeah,
the old Tyron type of thing. Out of this, listen, man, I don't know.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hi, Bernie. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, great. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. And yourself?
Doing well. You look happy. Were you happy after the fight? Or we were talking before, you were a little critical of yourself. Is that just your nature, or is there something that you weren't happy with?
I don't think I was exactly happy about the fight, or like how I did in the fight, honestly. For myself, I don't know. It just kind of felt like I got my ass beat for like 7 minutes and then got a submission. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I feel like I just got manhandled. And like, for me, like I would definitely like wanted to go in there and prove a point. And I felt like, I don't know, my performance in there didn't look like I was a top UFC flyweight contender. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't like feel like I went out there and like, I didn't go out there and look like I was ready to go be a world beater out there. I wasn't ready to go out there. I don't know. I just wanted to go out there and make a statement. And I felt like I didn't go out there and do that, you know?
Brandon, you made a statement. First of all, how are you, buddy? Nice to meet you.
Good, man.
Hey, man, I'm a jiu-jitsu man. And let me tell you something.
I know.
You might have made a statement if you went out there and submitted him or knocked him out in the first opening seconds. Oh, who's this kid? After that, you got a lot of fans after that fight. I'll tell you right now, a lot of new fans. I did not know who you were. I know who you are now. I love that match, man. Holy shit. Know what I like? I like you in bad positions doing technically the right thing to get out. You on all fours, starting off rough. Tim's in the wrestling ride. Before you look to just roll out, you step your leg behind his leg to make sure that he's not going to take your back. You know what the F I'm talking about. Yeah. I love that shit, man. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I appreciate it. But like at the same time, so I don't know, I, like especially trying to like, you get at this level, you got to start working on MMA IQ. I'm quick to like, want to die for submissions and stuff. And like, I don't know. I made a little bit of critical like errors that I don't know. If I was facing like a guy like Cejudo, that would have been the end of the fight. Like, you know what I'm saying? Or situations like that. If I'm facing the top of the guys, that could have been a difference maker. I jumped a guillotine when I should probably stop doing stuff like that. As especially going to being in the UFC now, is like I'm not going to get away with stuff like that anymore. You know, so. I know I put myself in some bad positions, but like I get what you're saying, and I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it all. Like I definitely do that.
That's a smart way to look at it. The way you're saying it is like I don't think I'll get away with it on this level. It's probably a smart way to see it. How did you handle walking without the crowd? Was that weird for you mentally at all?
Well, originally, man, it was going good. Like it was going smooth. I'm a pretty emotional fighter, man. I definitely like wear my heart on the sleeve a little bit when I go out there, so I get pretty emotional right before I go out there and fight. But I thought I kind of had it together until like right when I went for that walk. And then as soon as I started walking, like I kind of started to lose it a little bit. I don't know, man. Like I said, for me, like to go into a fight, like I feel like I go into a little bit of a dark place a little bit. Like that being said, is like I go in there, especially fighting a guy like Tim Elliott. I went in there and I was like, I just talked to my coach and I was like, I'm like, it's weird getting ready for a fight where like, I know a dude's not going to go out there and just like wrestle me down and hold me down for three rounds. You know, he's gonna try to beat my face in that mat. If I get on the ground, he's gonna throw 100 punches at my face and I'm gonna walk out like not in a good position, like, you know what I'm saying? So I walking into like a fight where you know it's gonna be an actual battle, it's a whole different mind state for me. So like I was going in there ready for whatever, and like I was ready to go out there and like get my ass beat in a sense, you know. But that being said, is so I don't know, I get like super emotional. It was different for me, but it kind of wrapped back up to like me kind of losing my shit.
It's funny when Jimmy, you brought that up, that with the lack of the crowd there. I want to see how much that affected Tim Elliott too, between rounds. I don't know if you saw this clip, Jimmy.
Yeah,
if you heard,
I did see it.
You saw it, right, Brandon? You see Tim Elliott, his coach talked to him before he gets off the school. He's like, yo, it's too quiet in here, or too fucking quiet in here, something like that. Straight up. I mean, it was like, to think that going into the second round is kind of fucking odd, to be honest with you.
Yeah. That's actually probably even more. Is like I'm used to fighting in like empty arenas. I don't have too many fans, as like, you know what I'm saying. So like, that's probably a little bit more like my benefit. And I was getting ready to fight on the Contender Series anyways, so I think it all kind of benefited me fighting in there. I think the only thing that didn't really benefit me is fighting in a smaller arena where. I like my game plan is with Tim, I'd probably be stick and move and stay on the outside and pick him apart from the outside. And that wasn't going to happen in that tiny arena because he's all over my ass.
Where did you grow up and what's the first martial art you started with, Brandon?
I started in a complete MMA. I grew up in Denver, Colorado, and I started off as like a complete MMA fighter. So like I started off in a gym. Oh, it was actually, we didn't like have much wrestling, but like I started off in an MMA gym where we worked jiu-jitsu and kickboxing. So I started off with my coach was a, my coach Mark Montoya now was my original kickboxing coach at the gym I trained at. So he was my Muay Thai coach at the gym that I was at. And then like another one of my corners, named him Scotty. He's one of my not a training partner, because he's obviously way better than me and like knows way more. So he was just like a guy who teach the morning classes and stuff. So I've been training with those guys forever, man. So I was 16 years old. So I started off in like an actual MMA gym doing MMA and doing all that.
You never did jiu-jitsu competitions, or did you?
Oh, I did jiu-jitsu competitions. Yeah, I did a lot of jiu-jitsu competitions when I was younger, but
I kind of shied away from it.
27.
No, what belt are you in jiu-jitsu?
Oh, I'm a black belt.
Oh, hell yeah, you are. Shit.
I got it not too long ago.
What's that?
I said I got it not too long ago, so like I wear it a little like tucked in, you know what I'm saying?
Man, I'm telling you, I was impressed. And did jiu-jitsu come to you quicker than the striking, or did you just – were you just money at everything, just natural at everything?
No, so I think originally, like when I was younger, I wanted to be a boxer. That was like my like main dream when I was a little kid. Like I was like play hockey a little bit, but I wanted to be a boxer, and that's what we like would always train for. So like when we started MMA, man, I started MMA like mainly because like I don't know, I got into like little jiu-jitsu, like watching like as you watch UFC, but we're fast forwarding through all the ground game and stuff. Like I could care less about the ground game when I first started watching MMA. So I fast forwarded through it and kind of like, I don't know, it kind of like you grew a little bit of a liking to it. And I had a big liking for the submission game of it. So I knew a little bit of stuff before I started it. And like me and my brother practiced triangles and all these like little moves and stuff before I actually went into the gym. But as far as it is, like I always wanted to be like a little more of a striker than anything. It's funny that I have like a little bit of a jiu-jitsu rep, because I always like just want to go out there and strike, and it just never ends that way.
That's too funny. What did I hear something in the broadcast about mentioning that you feel like you have ADD in the fight, or am I way off with that?
I think that kind of plays like a little bit of effect into like how like quickly I freak out on myself, is because I just get caught up in like I don't know, like, so something's not happening, or I'm not doing something in that situation. Like, I just got taken down like 3 times or whatever. Like, I'm just so caught up in that. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Like, if I'm not doing anything or something's not happening, I'm fully freaking out. Like, I don't know. I've watched videos of myself. I watched a video of myself, and I'm like, all right, you got to stay calm this fight. You don't need to move forward. Pick them apart from the outside. And like, I remember when I was thinking that, I'm bouncing around a little bit, and then 2 seconds later, I'm like, all right, I'm not doing shit. So I had to start moving forward again. So I think I just have a little bit of that, like, oh, I need to do something at all times, you know? So,
yeah. That's great.
So you said you had to work the next day?
I called in sick, man. That's like the most questions I got asked. I called in sick.
We have to know,
Yeah, my boss was like, oh, let me guess, you're not feeling good? I'm like, yeah, I'm not feeling good. I'm not feeling it today. But I don't call in sick ever, so they're cool with it.
What kind of job is it?
So I work at a juvenile youth detention center. So I work like juvies.
Do you counsel them, or are you security, or do you counsel them?
No, I'm more of like a security thing. I'm more of security than anything.
Now, how old are the kids that are there? Are they like, you know, like young, like 10 years old, or 17 and 16?
So Colorado's unique, and I don't know if Colorado's like that unique, but like, all I know about Colorado is, so we get I'm in a long-term facility, so they've did like a crowd that's going to be there. They're going to be there for a while, but I have kids up there till they're 21. So a lot of them, I have a couple 16, 17 year olds, but a lot of them are 19, like 18. So I have a little bit of older kids, which is pretty cool. They're like having that like little bit more mature kids is a little bit, but we have like maybe like 1 or 2 14 year olds in that facility. Yeah. It's a different job though, man. It's weird.
It is weird. Right. So what is your relationship like with them? Is it like, is it ever tense there, or are they most of them pretty calm, or?
So I've been specifically sticking with my pod for like probably like 6 months now, where I deal with the same kids, and it's like a new program they're trying. But I used to be like all around. But my pod specifically is really good with me. Like we do a really good job. But there are moments when it's tense, man. It's like I said, you're dealing with a lot of trauma when you work in that facility, and it goes both ways. Staff are going through a little bit of trauma with some of the kids, and the kids are going through a lot of trauma throughout the way they grew up. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know, man. You don't get like teenagers and the kids that age are like, it's different because they're grown up like in the sense of they hit physical puberty, but they're not rationally thinking constantly. So you end up in situations where a kid's not acting the most rational in that situation, and it kind of leads to like I don't know, like a grown man freaking out, and you have to kind of prevent that. And I'm pretty good at preventing it with just words now. Like I'm so like I don't know, I watch the way I talk, my manners and all that stuff, and I'm always polite constantly. So for the most part, I'm able to avoid all the physical confrontation. I haven't really been socked in the face yet. So that's been nice.
Yeah, I've talked to it. Sorry, they probably know that wouldn't be a smart move. I've talked to a lot of guys who worked on Rikers Island, and that's just it's a really scary job because you're pretty much, you know, you're in the middle of things.
Yeah. So we've had riots and stuff before. Like I said, for the most part, my kids are really calm, the kids that I deal with, and we kind of know how to address each other. And I've worked around them for so long now. At this point, I've been having that job for 2 years, so they know how I act. They know that I'm kind of easy to get along with, and vice versa. So it makes it a little easier.
Hey Brandon, I seen how emotional you were. We just talked about it after the fight. How are you before the fight? Because I've had fighters. I've seen fighters just sometimes just crying before a fight. And they're not scared. Nothing to do with scared, but they're just. And it's just to somebody who doesn't know anybody, they can be like, "What is this guy? Is scared to go out and fight?" Nothing to do with that. But they're just so everything, just the moment, and just I don't know if it's the pressure, but it is a very. How are you before the fight?
I'm a full on psychopath, man. I'm probably like one of the crazier ones you've ever seen. Like I go punch walls, I do all that stuff, man. Where like I'm pretty calm, like everywhere else, but like right before a fight, man, I hit that. I was like called like the 7 stages of grief. Like, I don't know if you ever heard that in like psychology, like there's 7 stages of grief, and it's like denial, like all like when I'm riding to the arena, I'm like, it's not even going to happen. Like I might even get a car accident. Like something might happen, you know, like, oh, that's not going down. And then next thing you know, like I'm kind of going through accepting it. And finally, like, I don't know, like I get bitter about the whole thing. And then like, right when I go out there, I kind of just accept it. And like, right when I walk into the arena, I'm like, once I'm like in that cage, I'm good. Like I'm good. But like, before then, man, I just think like my emotions get to me, man. It's everything I ever wanted. Like, and especially like in a fight like that, or even like the fights leading up to the UFC are probably the hardest for me. Cause I knew like, if I lose this fight, then what does that even mean? Like, if I lose this fight, I'm not losing the fight at against the top opponent in the world. I'm losing a fight that could just be like, all right, well, maybe you should think about a different job, you know, or maybe think about doing something else. So then it gets like super emotional for me because I put like, I don't know, you get it. You put so much work in it. You put your whole entire heart into the sport, man. You love this thing so much. And I just want to go out there and just like not choke. I don't want to go out there and not perform. You know, that's all I want to go out there. Like if I lose, I lose. But if I go out there to go impress myself, that's all I want to go out there and do. And like, I don't know, man, it gets nerve wracking. And like, I don't want to go out there and like flop out there. You know, I don't know. It's a lot. It's a lot. And like I said, it's everything I've ever wanted in my whole entire life. And like, I'm walking out to the UFC, the UFC Apex, man. I was just thinking, I'm like, this is everything I've ever wanted to. And like, don't step on your dick out there, man. Don't fuck up. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah, so it was more of that.
You had no problem pulling the trigger. I'll tell you that much, man. I mean, I can't wait to see who's next for you, dude.
Yeah.
A lot of guys, their first showing, that's the biggest thing, man. Am I going to clam up on the world stage in the big show? There was none of that. So, I mean, far from it. What an entertaining fight, dude. I really
can't. Yeah, congratulations, man.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. I appreciate all that, man. I hope that, like, to show you guys a little bit different side of me where I can entertain a little bit more. So I'm excited that you guys think that.
And it'll be a great day when you're done with your – I always love when fighters come on. And we talk to them once or twice, and they got their jobs, and you know, a lot of times it's a bouncer, and then they can finally leave the day job. Like, that's always a great day when you can finally quit the day job. So hopefully it won't be too long before you can just leave that and you don't have to do it.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's so when I first started MMA, like, I had to get a job. So I've been working like full time and then trying to manage this MMA life. And then like, I was going to school for a while I was doing it, and just like, I don't know. I'm glad that like I'm to a point like where like that bonus is going to allow me to quit my job. So I have a next training session where I can go to bed on time. I work overnights to train full time. So I can go to bed, like actually sleep adequate hours, and then even hit extra training sessions. You know what I'm saying? I can do all the basic classes if I wanted to. And I'm so excited about the opportunity and the fact that they decided to choose me and the Tim Alec for the fight of the night.
Yeah.
I don't know how just it was or not. I don't know if I would agree with it, but I appreciate it, man. And I couldn't be any more excited that they gave it to me, man. Like, it's an opportunity for the next year for me to go out there and just, all right, this is my job now. Like, this is what I'm going to do for the next year, and I'm going to give it my all, and let's see where I go.
All right. Well, definitely good talking to you, Brandon. And again, congratulations and great, great first showing. So I'm sure you have a lot of great fights ahead of you.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate you guys. Appreciate you guys having me on. Nice to meet both of you too.
Yeah, you too, buddy. We'll talk to you again.
Awesome, Brandon. Take care, buddy.
Take care.
You too, bro.
Take care, man.
What do you think? And by the way, hats off to Tyron Woodley's, whoever was the cut man in that corner. Really, I thought there might be a doctor stop. I mean, they did a great job of keeping that from being out of control. But John Jones, I want to talk about John Jones. I mean, first of all, incredible to watch him during the riots taking spray cans from these fucking assholes. How great was that?
I like when those guys, they don't even get mouthy. Now, here it is. There you go, Mr. Jones.
They did what I would have done. I don't even know if they knew it was him. They just knew it was a really big dude demanding their spray can.
You know what I like? That wasn't some, some job just to some like, you know, press thing. You know what I mean? Somebody filmed him doing that. And, people are quick to jump on the guy if he does something a little naughty or whatever it is. But, you know, hats off to John Jones, man, because a lot of guys aren't doing that. You know, I mean, and a lot of I guarantee he got those spray paint out of those kids' hands quicker than any cop would or anybody. I mean, they probably feared him because they knew who he was and whatnot. But I respected it, man. I respect John Jones a lot for that.
And by the way, I'll say this. He's talking about vacating light heavyweight title because he said there's nothing in it for him to fight Reyes or to fight Blachowicz. And like, he wants Ngannou. And I will say, not that I don't want to see Reyes or I told you Thiago Santos is the rematch I really want to see. Yeah. But I think Jones wants a big name fight. He wants a big, big name. And there's not many in the light heavyweight division. There's a lot of very good fighters, but there's not a lot of big names. I mean, compared to like Ngannou. I'm not shitting on those guys either. Blachowicz and Dominic Reyes. I thought Dominic Reyes won the fight. But you know what I mean? Like, I understand why he wants to go to heavyweight. There's a lot of big fights there for him.
I look at it like I would love to see – that's great for John Jones, I feel. In a sense, I think he wants to challenge himself and, you know, he feels he could beat him. He feels very confident in it. And I think after just taking, you know, being so dominant in his division for so long, he might need that kind of challenge to even motivate him. But on the other side, for Francis, I'd still like to see Francis do a few more things. You know, get that rematch, try to fight Steve. I mean, fight DC, then go for Stipe. And he does that. He beats DC. He beats Stipe. Imagine that fight. So I think it's just a little too soon.
Maybe, yeah.
But I also think that maybe John Jones is thinking he might get taken out before they meet, and then it'll be less of a – you know what I mean? So, hey, you know, I could definitely see why John Jones would want that fight.
It would be very interesting to see that. I mean, obviously Francis is a bigger guy. He's a stronger guy. I think Jones is a more skilled fighter, obviously, and a jiu-jitsu guy and wrestling and with his legs are amazing how effective he is with that oblique kick. But he's never been – and again, Jones can take a punch, but no one's ever hit him the way Francis – I'd be interested to see how he reacts getting hit by Francis once, if he's able to withstand that and regroup, or if it just crumbles.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed – also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
I'll tell you, this is what's nice about both our guests, Brandon Royval and Billy Quarantillo, is it's like a coming out party for them for the MMA world here. Like, now the world gets to see these guys, and, you know, if you weren't a fan before, now you got somebody that you can get excited to watch now. Like, you know what I mean? Somebody new, I should say. So that's what I love about that. I mean, that fight with the Alpha Ginger, is that what his
name
is?
Yeah.
Spike Carlisle. I want to ask what he was thinking when he all of a sudden, towards the end of the first round, Spike just turns around and says, "All right, I was close enough to the end of the round," walks away, and then Billy gets up, punches him, takes him down.
That's
exactly what he should do.
Sure.
Well, shit, man, get after that guy. So I want to know, I mean, what that's a great killer instinct.
That was great killer. And what a weird moment just to take a stroll away.
I want to know what was going through his mind when he saw that. Is this guy, what the hell was this guy, nuts? Because you know what it is? He knew he was a wacky guy. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
Yeah, he is.
Other guy's got a wacky style. I'll tell you, that's not the last we're going to see of the Alpha Ginger.
No,
we're going to see him again.
The Alpha Ginger is terrific. He was on a five-fight win streak before that, and he's only lost two fights.
Well, I'll tell you. And what is Billy's record now?
Billy's 14-2, I think.
And he's 2-0 now in the UFC.
By the way, Matt, we all know
what.
And we will go over our picks, which, let's be honest, not great.
Oh, let's do that. Let's do that, Matt.
Augusto Sakai defeated Blagoya Ivanov, and I took Ivanov, and you took Sakai.
Thank you.
How did anybody see that? Didn't one of the judges see it 30-20?
Yeah, I remember Ivanov.
30-27 for Ivanov. And I'm like, how did you see that 30-27?
I have no idea.
That's crazy. All those big body kicks that fucking Sakai was putting on him. It was crazy.
I like Sakai. I was impressed with that. He was pretty patient in there. Really nice kicks. He had to get on the bike a little bit when he had to. And I liked it. I enjoyed it. Even though he's a little unassuming because he looks maybe a little chubby, a little stocky guy. And Sakai's a really nice striker, man. Yeah. I want to see what's next for him. That was a good test for him, even though, you know?
Also, by the way, we should take a moment, Matt, to praise our good friend, 30-25, all three, I guess. Caitlin Chookagan, what a dominant fucking performance over Antonina Shevchenko. I mean, it was complete 10-8, 10-8, and then 10-9. But really, and Shevchenko looked decent in the beginning of the third round, but then, you know, Chookagan, I think, won the second half of that round. Absolutely incredible performance. It's the best I've seen her fight yet.
And you know what's great about that? Like, when you think of Caitlin, you're thinking, a lot of times you're thinking her, like, on her feet with her strikes. Yeah. And she's, because that's, you know, I mean, that's kind of her MO. That's what she does. Yeah.
Yes.
But in this one, so strategic. And you've seen a clip of her working with our friend, Ryan LaFlair.
That's right.
Former UFC fighter, welterweight, at his school doing the same kind of combo. Stepped in with a jab. Then jab, right, left hook, clinch, takedown. And then you've seen her do that right through the body lock in the fight. I love seeing that. I love seeing people practicing things and then executing them in the fight, because that's really what it's all about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because there's no getting lucky in that. It's like, look, it's exactly like, just like when we saw Jorge Masvidal practicing that flying knee, and then with Mike Brown the day before he did that on Ben Askren. So when you see Caitlin do the same combo into that body lock and then a takedown, shows you how smart she was in preparation for this fight.
Yeah, I mean, she was and look, I give a certain amount of credit too for you know, Shevchenko, I thought, did a great job to survive, because she was in trouble very early in the first round.
Very tough. But we got Billy Q coming on. I want to tell you, though, a sign to look for when somebody's mounted from the waist down, okay? From the waist down, if they're not moving, they're not going to be getting out anytime soon. All right, so I would definitely be working on her trap and roll to elbow escape to trap and roll type of scenarios, whoever's working with Antonina. What's up, Billy?
What's up, boys? How you guys doing?
Good. Congratulations. That was a really amazing fight, and what an amazing withstanding that first round onslaught that he was really pretty devastating that first round. I know.
It was, you know, you imagine how these fights are going to go. I knew he was a big, strong dude, and I knew he's super aggressive in the first round. You know, his last fight, he won by knockout in that first round. So I knew he was going to start off being aggressive. I did not want it to go that way. Like, I didn't expect it to go that way. And, you know, right from the opening bell, he came right at me, and he started punching me and elbowing me in the back of the head. And from that moment on, I'm like, dude, you got to do everything you can to not get finished, and you got to win this fight. Like, and it was motivating enough to do everything I could to get the decision.
Talk about adversity, man, to deal with that. What an onslaught. And I'll tell you, a lot of times, guys, they put out such an energy trying to take a guy out that they use so much energy doing that they're not the same guy in the next round. He had a pretty good gas tank for a guy to have his foot on the pedal the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought I was going to be able to break him. And as you know, so he tagged me up in the first round, and I knew once I got him in my full guard, I felt really comfortable. You know, I saw his punches coming, and you know, I got, in my opinion, I actually just rewatched the fight this morning, and I think I got a little too comfortable in the guard, because I just felt like he was going to wear himself out. He was wearing himself out just trying to throw punches. I got too comfortable, and I thought I'd be able to get a submission a little easier, a triangle choke or an arm bar. And he give him credit. He kept fighting on, and he escaped a couple of my attacks. And, you know, rewatching it, I was like, man, what a wild-ass fight it was.
That was an incredible fight. Matt had some theory. Matt, do you want to share your theory about how he kept escaping? Because we noticed the same thing.
Now, listen, I mean, beautiful setups. Those triangles. And I go, oh, my God, he just put himself back in it. And I see you tighten it. My theory, now you know better than me, the Alpha Ginger's corn rolls, they helped it slip out. Did you – I don't know if you watched it. Did you feel that or no?
Yeah, well, it was. I did remember, like, elbowing, like, both my elbows right now are all jacked up from just elbowing. I was trying to crack open a coconut that whole fight, you know, trying to elbow him and trying to break him.
I do remember, I think I made, and you're the master black belt. Like, and you know, I've trained at your gym a few times. I was training with the Long Island boys right after the fight, Ally Quinton, Aljamain, and Dent, that whole, your whole crew, man. I love those guys. And so when I go for that triangle, I have such a problem. Like, I try to lock the triangle in, and I've made this mistake before. I elbowed him enough where he was able to slip his head out, you know, doing the damage of elbowing him and pushing it out just enough. So what I should have done, watching it back, I should have hooked the leg and came this way more. And instead of elbowing him and giving him a chance to push out, I should have went for the choke.
Yeah. Wait, let me ask you, Billy. Now you're saying, did the elbowing, are you saying your body turned a certain way that allowed you, that allowed him to slip, or you elbowed him so hard you actually pushed him back through your leg?
Yeah, a little bit of both. A little bit of, like, my elbow actually pushing his head, you know, from, like, I'll show you, if it was like locked up, like here, my elbow pushing his head out that way. And that's basically what he did. He kind of came out the back door. And, you know, I thought it was close. That I went for a rear naked choke. He did a really good job. He was definitely bigger and stronger and more explosive than me. And that was just a credit to, you know, this quarantine. I haven't been able to lift as many weights. We haven't been able to wrestle. He wanted to do it up, you know, up to 150 pounds when I could easily make 145. And I didn't put enough, a lot of weight on. So he's definitely a physically strong person. And, you know, big win for me.
Yeah. What a shitty way to get out of a triangle, by the way, to have your head elbowed through of all the ways to get out.
And I just keep remembering elbowing him so many times in those cornrows.
One of the stranger moments, Billy, is when he just decided to end around like a few seconds before it was actually over. I love the killer instinct.
Yeah.
You're just like, fine, God, you went after him. You hit him, you took him down. What was going through your mind there?
Yeah, so I actually just made a post addressing this, but I did want to talk about it. So for those who don't know, you know, he won his last fight by those, you know, it was a close, I don't know if you watched his last fight. He elbowed Alon. It looked like some close elbows where they could have been like a 10-6 elbow, and they looked like they could have been in the back of his head. So I didn't like that at all, because I know who Alon is. And, you know, not only that he's my boy, I just thought it was like kind of close to illegal elbows. So this fight starts, and he almost knocks me out with the same elbows. He elbows me right here in the back of the head. Like, I got a huge bruise in the back of my head. So I'm with some fighters, I feel like I wouldn't have done it. I feel like with some fighters, but after he elbowed me in the back of the head and we got in such a dogfight to start this fight off, in my head, honestly, I'm like, fuck this dude. Like, whatever I can do to win this fight, I'm winning this fight.
Okay.
And when he got up with 10 seconds left, me and him both do enough rounds where we know that is plenty enough time for me to jump up and hit you. We also know that he throws a lot of like spinning attacks. So when I heard 10 seconds left, he got up. For a split second, I was thinking he might come with like a spinning back fist. So I hesitate for like a split second. The ref says, keep fighting. And then I was like, oh man, there's still enough time where I knew I could land that and basically try to win the round. You know what I mean? Cause like, why would you do that?
Yeah. That was a really odd move. You don't see many guys do that, but it's always interesting to watch how the other person reacts when they do it. Like a lot of guys might have actually went like, oh, was the round over? Like what's, but you didn't, you knew exactly where you were.
It's a fight. We only had 15 minutes to win the fight, especially since he was winning the early part of the rounds. When he got up, I'm going right till the end of that bell. You know what I mean? So that was ridiculous. And since he already elbowed me in the back of the head, in my theory, there's, as long as it's not after the bell, cause I'm not like a dirty fighter. There was no reason for him to get up in that position. And definitely I'll take advantage of that every single time. And like I said, if it was a fighter who, you know, wasn't like saying, all, you know, before the fight, this guy said he's going to massacre me. He said he's going to like crucify me, all these weird religious things. And then to do that, I was like, dude, if you give me a chance to punch you in the face within those 15 minutes, I'm going to punch you in the face. And that's how I ended the fight too. Just punch you in the face as many times as I could.
I'm going to smite you. Like you never want biblical terms from your opponent.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, a lot of times during a fight, we were just talking to Brandon Ravel and about something similar is during the fight, you're so in the moment after the fight's over, sometimes you're thinking of the things that didn't go so well for you or some of the mistakes you made or whatever. So how confident were you that you were getting a decision? Because I'll tell you, close fight for sure.
Very close.
Were you worried? What were you thinking when it was
over? Honestly, looking back on the fight, I know what I did wrong. And that was, it was, you know, not to make excuses. We didn't, what I did was a lot of the stuff I've been doing that quarantine. And that is like when our gym shut down, you know, Matt Arroyo, you know, he trained with you quite a bit. Yeah, he always says good things about Matt. There's a picture of Matt, Sarah, and the Ultimate Fighter team right in our gym there. And you've been there and done seminars. So we had to shut it down. And during that time, all I was doing was I was boxing in my yard. I was basically boxing on my patio, like hitting mitts and sparring. And then my buddy had a garage where we would just do jiu-jitsu and we would do scrambles. It wasn't big enough to wrestle in. So I got so comfortable, you know, on my back. And honestly, like the way he was in my guard, I just knew I could submit him. So why stand back up and have him like punch me in the back of the head or the elbow in the back of the head when I threw up those diamonds and I thought I was going to be able to submit him? I put too much confidence that he escaped a few of those. And next thing you know, we ran out of time. But I felt like I was headed towards breaking him. The biggest mistake I made is just getting too comfortable with my guard. Like, let's get back. Next fight, I know I just got to get back to my feet and try to finish him, because even though I thought, you know, like I came close on the triangle on the rear naked choke, you know, you're not winning the fight usually when you're on your back. So after watching the fight, if you listen to it without commentary, I feel like he doesn't really do that much damage when he's on top of me and I'm throwing up submissions. And then when I go to take his back, I do land a lot of big shots, bust him up. His whole face was busted up. And I think I just, I won a lot more of those scrambles too.
How hurt were you in the first? And again, because sometimes it looks like it's worse than it is, because a lot of times the punches aren't landing flush or they're being blocked. How hurt were you in there? Because it looked like it was lucky for you to survive the first round. Were you not as hurt as it appeared?
No, honestly, the first, you know, and then this is something I got to break. We knew he was going to come running right at me. So I had a couple options, and the options are kind of peel off to the side, you know, try to take him down. But that cage is a lot smaller than I was anticipating. And once the fight started, he was right there. And instead of coming with like punches, he came with like a front kick. And so at that point, I was going to just catch the kick and take him down, which we kind of started off. And then once I grabbed his leg, he started elbowing in the back. And I'm like, dude, I literally watched his last fight probably 10 times where he won the fight by right away. They got into a scramble and started elbowing right in the back. And so I was like, dude, he can't beat me. So that's why early on in the fight, that's why I got kind of back to my guard. And that was kind of like where I was able to recover. And I recovered after the first round. Like at the end of the first round, I'm like, all right, now it's time to turn it up and break this guy. And he did a better job resisting that than I was hoping for. But overall, I still think I did more damage and was closer to finishing the fight.
Yeah, I mean, between that second and third round, your coach, Matt Arroyo, what did he tell you? Jimmy, what Billy was saying before, his jiu-jitsu coach, Matt Arroyo, he was on, when I coached first Matt Hughes on season 6 of The Ultimate Fighter, Matty Boy was on my team. And then after that, Matt, he wanted to get some training in for the finale. Matt actually stayed at my house for like a week. And so me and Matt are cool. Yeah, Matt's a great guy. Listen, the first round, even though it ended great with you with that punch and takedown, you know, a rough round. Second round, you're back in it. It comes down to the third round. Did Matt stress to you? You needed that round? Do you remember anything between the corner?
Yes, and you know, this is something, if you've seen my fights, a lot of times this is kind of what we are anticipating he's going to get off to a first start. You know, if I lose round one, that's okay, but don't take too much damage and go and break him in rounds two and three. So he basically told me what he tells me every fight, like whether it's a close fight or not, you need to go look for that finish, and that's always what we're working towards, and it usually works out. I don't remember if he mentioned anything like you're down 2-0. I remember him saying, I remember him saying round two is a close round, but he did say, you know, you can't spend as much time on your back and do everything you can to finish this guy because just so there's not any controversy.
It's funny. It's funny how one fight could really just the fight IQ that you gain, like from one fight. We were just talking to the with Brandon Revell. And he was saying how, oh, well, I know some things I shouldn't have done. Like, I shouldn't sit back the guard with my guillotine because I can't get away with that. in like the high and on the highest level. I can't get away with that. And it's funny how you're mentioning how spending too much time on my back, I could lose a fight like that. And it sticks with you. And you guys both want to fight, but you're taking this from it. And it reminds me of like one with Aljamain. Sterling, his fight with Brian Caraway. He gave the fight away because he's so good at the neck. He's like, I got his neck. He went to the guard. His head pops out. Gave away the round. Might have lost him the fight. Never did that again. So it's funny how you just take one fight could just really just instill, you know, just some shit in you and just
so much.
It raises your fight IQ. You know,
I'm lucky. You know, it was a close fight. I've seen split. You know, Jorge Masvidal's had like three split decision losses in a row. Yeah. So I'm lucky because I'm not one of these. I'm not like some of these fighters who've been around forever who have that I can't take a year off financially comfortably, so to still be able to get my win bonus, I didn't get the fight of the night bonus, which I was definitely hoping for. But at the end of the day, I'm lucky to get the win and still know you got a lot to learn from this. One of those things is, I'm not even a big 145er to go up to 150. I knew how risky it was. And I knew it was taking a big chance, but just to go and I got to make sure I'm, that I don't get like physically, because it's one thing to not be the better fighter, but to, if I would have lost this fight, I think it would have been because I was a little bit smaller than him and he was able to physically beat me, let alone on technique. Cause a lot of that stuff, I took his back and he basically just exploded in. And I'm like, damn, like a dude my size shouldn't be able to do that to me.
It's weird when guys they're so physical and strong.
Yeah,
I hate when they get out just totally the wrong way. It's like, wait a minute. Like, you had his back. I'm like, oh, this is – and he kind of just reached and was like – it's like, what the fuck? Like, and it makes it worse, obviously, skin on skin. You can't do that shit with even a T-shirt on with the friction. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So little things like that, it's amazing.
It's definitely different. And that's exactly what I took from it. I'm like, every fight you want to get better, but I'm like, my jiu-jitsu's got to get tighter. My wrestling's got to get tighter and continue with the conditioning, because that's obviously one of my bigger weapons is, I would love to do like a 5-round fight. I think that would be like, because I sometimes get off to a slow start, and then I know when these guys, like these are first round fighters, we call them, where they have like 9 or 10 first round finishes, they're not used to seeing guys in the second and third round still going hard. And I've seen that shock in a lot of people, and credit to him, because usually I break them and finish them, and he was able to make it till the final bell.
It was a great fight, and there's a great argument for it being fight of the night too. It was really, really close. And who do you have lined up next? Do you have your eye on anybody you want next?
There's a few people. So this was actually my third opponent. So when I first signed with the UFC, and that was and Matt knows, I trained with one of my boys, Matt Frivola, who actually lives in Long Island, trains with Matt Sarah. He's here right now with us because of the whole pandemic. And so the next thing is I'm going to try to get ready for his fight. He's fighting on June 20th in Vegas. So my goal is to help him out and then kind of decide what's going to be next. I got a couple of bumps and bruises I got to get looked at. But I was matched up when I was training. I came up to see Matt Sarah and train with those guys. I was matched up with this guy, Chris Fishgold. He backed out of the fight. So that was my first fight. And then this next fight, the pandemic happened. So we canceled the Gavin Tucker fight. So those are two guys that, like, I signed contracts to fight them. So, like, I've always had them. I've always imagined fighting them. There's some other guys that I would love to see. Guys who are just like more popular, like Chase Hooper. That'd be a fun fight. I really like that kid, and he's super young. He's fighting Alex Caceres. Those two guys both have big names that, I would like to fight guys with bigger names. You know what I mean? That can help me climb the rankings. But I'm open to fight whoever. Featherweight division's a fun division. Right now I just want to heal up and then see what else is up there, but definitely a bigger name because, I'm 2-0 now. And, my plan is to get a world championship, keep fighting until I could get in the top 15 and then keep climbing from there.
Yeah. That Caceres fight is this Saturday at, on the prelims at 250. That's a great fight.
Yeah. Big fight and both guys have big names. Chase. I actually met Chase. So he got signed by the Contender Series and he wasn't fighting in the UFC yet. And I didn't know, I really didn't know much about him. And we actually grappled at the PI. And I'm like, man, this kid's pretty good. We went back and forth. No one submitted anyone. But it got to a point where, like, he had a fight coming up. So, like, I wasn't, like, we weren't really trying to, like, hurt each other because I didn't really know much about him. And he had a fight coming up. Neither one of us caught each other. But I'm like, man, this kid's, you know, he's pretty good. And next thing I know, he gets the featherweight deal. And it seems like he's got all this publicity, and which is good because, you know, he's a young fighter. So I don't want to, like, call out this, like, young kid, but he's definitely got a lot of publicity, and he's a featherweight too. So I like the guy. It'd be a fun fight for me. Alex Caceres has been around forever. He's a big name, and he actually eliminated when I first moved to Gracie Tampa South, one of the guys there just got eliminated from Alex Caceres to get on the Ultimate Fighter, and this was way back in the day. So, like, I've always kind of thought, I'm like, oh, man, I'll probably have to fight him eventually, but I never thought it would be this much longer.
Either one of those guys, I'd love to see you fight either one of them. Chase, it's funny about Chase, because you look at him, he goes around telling people he's Ben Askren's kid, because he's got the same, the wacky hair. He's got the hair like that. But you look at you, and if people take a look at you, they go, all right, this kid's, you can tell he's a fighter. You know, you see your ears, you got that look.
Yeah.
You look at Chase, you kind of look like you could put him in a fucking headlock or something, like throw him in a locker, and he's the dangerous kid. That's why, not only that, he's a very entertaining fighter, but I think that adds to a little bit to it, because when you look at him, you're almost like, oh, man, I want to protect this kid. And meanwhile, he's a badass. It's funny.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. So, like, I don't want to call him out because he's like the youngest UFC player. He's like 10 years younger than me. So I don't want to, like, act like I'm, like, picking on this kid. But at the same time, he's super popular. It would be a fun fight. I think he's undefeated still. He's 9-0. And also, since he basically got a UFC deal, and he got, like, regional fights, so he actually makes a good – he's on his second contract already, which, you know, I don't think he should be making more than me, because I had to go through the Ultimate Fighter, I had to go through the Contender Series, and then I got my first UFC contract. So even though I'm 2-0 in the UFC, he's still on his, like, you know, he has more fights under his Zuffa contract.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Well, I'd like to see it, man.
Yeah.
I'd watch –
yeah, Matt, I'll come. I actually missed out. I was going to come and train with you and Ray Longo, man. You guys are so – I appreciate you guys so much. I love that school up there. You guys got a real special gym and a real special camp, and I love getting up there. You know, being a Buffalo, New York guy, I love the New York cross-training.
Hey, man, you fit right in, dude. I loved seeing you last time. And when we're able to strangle each other again, you're welcome back anytime.
I know. Yeah, I remember last time, and I was like, damn. And everyone from your gym, I remember all of them being like, hey, man, you want to roll? And I can tell, I'm like, damn, dude, these guys are all good. You know, we were getting in with all of them. Like, damn, everyone here is really good.
Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate that, dude.
Yeah, no problem, man.
It's great talking to you, Billy, and I'm sure we'll see you again. And congratulations. It was really a great fight, and you look great.
Thank you guys so much, man. This is just the beginning. I want to, you know, keep this going, and I'm just going to keep getting better and better and better. I love learning it. I love this game. I remember talking to, like, DC and Bisbing at the fighters meeting. They're like, oh, man, what are you so happy about? And I just got done seeing, like, some of the shit that Carlisle was saying online. He's like, oh, it's going to be a massacre. He's going to be this. And I was smiling because I'm like, man, I love this shit. Like, this guy's talking smack. You get, like, that nervous adrenaline. You're like, I can't let this dude win this fight. And, like, you know, you're talking to all these big, you know, now Matt Serra, this is another former world champion, Hall of Famer, talking to Bisbing, DC, like Laura Sanko, just all these people that, you know, are big shots now. And you, of course, Jimmy, all the big shots. And it's great to be here.
Well, thanks, Billy. It was great watching you fight. I'm sure we will have you on again whenever you like. And before your next fight.
Very entertaining, bro. Congrats again.
Thanks, Matt. Yo, I appreciate it so much. Aljamain, I know.
Yes.
Aljamain, that fight card this weekend, wow, it's a banger. I think he's going to handle his business and hopefully get that title fight.
Dude, I can't wait,
time for him, yes.
I'm so excited. So much exciting stuff. I'm so happy the fights are back. I really am.
I know. Yeah, it's a good time, man. And I like what they're doing back-to-back weeks. It was, you know, it was a little different without the crowd, but watching it now, like, it makes no difference, man. Like, it was a fight's a fight.
And being on Tough, that you can relate to that.
That's what I said after. So this was my fourth fight in, like, a tiny crowd. I was like, dude, I want my next fight to be in, like, a stadium. Like, I want to fight in front of millions. Like, that's what we dreamed about.
I'll tell you, I feel the guys that fought on Tough have a little bit of an advantage here. Tim Elliott that guy's got experience. You see between rounds him going, you know, man, it's too fucking quiet in here. Like, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if he said fucking. Did he say fucking? Did I throw a fucking in?
Yeah, no, I think you did say it's too fucking.
Okay, good.
I think so.
Oh, you did.
I don't want to
you fucking say it. No.
Throw that in there.
I did think that was weird too because, yeah, it felt like, especially how the pandemic was, that, like the UFC staff, the whole time we were in that hotel, they weren't letting people come and go. They checked us. They kept changing these like bracelets that we had. It did feel like the Ultimate Fighter were like, it's like, I'm a grown man, but you're telling me where I when I can leave, when I can go. And some people I'm sure were not used to that because, you know, usually as fighters, we do it so we can make our own schedules. Like I want to do whatever I want.
Yes, you know? And, true.
When people tell us what to do, people get on edge, especially when you know you got to fight. So for me being on the Ultimate Fighter, me and Frivola were roommates. Like we did back in our college days.
Ah.
And it was easy, man. I didn't have any family. My fiance had to stay home. My dad, my family. So no distractions. And you know, I'm just happy we got to keep our cell phones and listen to music.
Oh, that's the biggest thing. I remember getting back then I had a fucking iPod. This was a while ago when I was on the Ultimate Fighter. I remember getting it back and just, I was so happy, maybe because I won the fucking thing. But it's funny, man. These memories you're having, getting ready for these fights. I was just looking on Instagram and you got out in Vegas now. They went to the Red Rock like Canyon where the mountains are.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it was Marab, Aljo, Raging Al, their buddy Zuka, the whole crew over there.
Yeah.
Was Matt Frivola with them? Maybe not. I'm not sure.
I did that the one time when I cut weight, and I know exactly what you're saying. Like you look back on these, and we saw that whole crew right after the fight. What a good group of guys.
Oh.
They were so excited, and So me, Frivola, and them we all got together, and yeah, man, good memories. And I told the guys who aren't in the UFC yet that are trying to get there, I'm like, dude, you'll look back on this and be like, you know, it's awesome to see like the guys bringing them up too. Same thing with our guys at Gracie Tampa South. Like, I want to try to get them out there and start getting used to doing this stuff.
It's a great – listen, as a guy that looks back on his career on times like that, getting ready for the weeks of the fight and the week of the fight, and it stays in your mind, dude, and it's just it's great memories for the rocking chair. You know what I mean? It's just something – fun that they're putting on Instagram with them running on the mountain. Marab is doing pull-ups on a cliff. And I'm like, these guys, they might just be like spending an afternoon there, but they, you know, that's something that's going to stay with them forever. Yeah. It was so cool, man.
Yeah. That's funny. You mentioned Marab. So the day of our, the day I was cutting weight, I cut the weight and we came back and me, Arroyo and Rawlings, and Frivola are all hanging out. We were watching your Dana White's, looking for a fight.
Yeah.
And we watched the episode with Marab and watching, you know, you and your family there and him and you coaching everyone. You coached Jiu-Jitsu James to a win.
Yes.
And
then James Gonzalez.
That kid's a stud too.
He is a stud.
And then watching Marab get the win and dancing all around, we're like, man, this is like, even though it's like a regional show, I'm like, look at those are all things to look back on. Just being like, man, anytime I get nervous right before a fight, I'm like, dude, what if you were in an office right now? Or like, right? what if when you're 65 or 70, you're like, man, I wish I could be doing that now. Like, so what's the point to be nervous when we're living like rock stars?
And you can always stop. You don't have to do it. You know, it's one of those things that, hey, I'm doing what I want to do.
Yeah, exactly. And I've been lucky enough to have some really shitty jobs, like being a server, working, cleaning dishes, working in a law office that was just paperwork all day. I'm like, dude, this ain't bad.
Why a law office? Did you want to be a lawyer or a paralegal?
No. So actually I didn't want to at all. So I did go to business school, but I was an amateur fighter and I basically needed a job I wanted to work during the day because most of our training was at night. So what I would do before then, I was always like a server. I would just hustle, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday at nighttime, and then work during the weekends, and then I would train all week. So there's a guy, he's a brown belt at our gym now. His name's Pete Molinelli. He owns a law office, and he basically just gave me the job just to help me out, just to like help me with my career. And so he basically gave me a job in his law office, basically peddling paperwork, like going through some like the paperwork, basically being like an assistant.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
And I did. It was really easy work. It was basically just making sure certain things were in order. But he basically gave me the job just to help me out and kind of further my MMA career.
Man, I would rather lose a fight than start doing that paperwork shit.
It's-
oh, my God.
I think Billy's with me. Billy, it's all about the journey, buddy. And I'm happy. I'm congrats on the fight again, dude. Can't wait to see what's next. Both our guests today, you and Brandon Revelle, I think it's like a coming out party to the MMA world, because you guys might have been known, but those your fights over the weekend, man, shit. Now you put the world on notice. Everybody, you know, guys are going to start looking forward to your fights more and more like I am. Hey, man, congrats, bro.
Yeah, we'll talk to you again, all right?
Thank you guys so much for having me. I'll definitely be back again soon, man. I really appreciate it.
Be all good, right, Billy. Nice talking to you.
All right, guys. Take care, Billy.
We really have to go over the picks really quick.
There's only a couple of them because Billy's fight wasn't on it because that was jumped up, I think, from the prelims.
Let's look, Jimmy. Let's look at our picks. You know,
we both lost on Tyron.
Yes. Can I just tell you?
Sure.
I was so in. Well, what did you pick with Mackenzie Dern?
I picked her. You picked first round sub. I picked a second round sub.
Okay. What happened again?
I submitted her in the first round.
I hit the applause if we had it. Listen to me. I love that knee bar she did.
Incredible.
It was a very jiu-jitsu 101. A lot of times you're going for an arm bar, they pull out, the leg's there, you go for the leg. She put her knee behind her knee. She reached over, pelvis forward, brought it to her butt, seized that up. You see it going, bending in the wrong direction. It was just that, you see the level of what kind of jiu-jitsu player she is. In a transition like that, somebody else would have you twist off, kick on your butt. She had that thing pinpoint where if Cyphers didn't tap out, that leg's broken. I wouldn't be surprised if she's you know, got some ice on that thing right now.
Yeah, that was a great. She looked. I think that Cyphers had a little bit of luck striking too, and it looked like Mackenzie might have a tough time, but. That was really a beautiful, beautiful knee bar.
Awesome knee bar, man. Yeah. And she had the, you know, and she was getting a little pieced up at the beginning, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Hannah Cyphers was using good framework, kneeing her, elbows, punches. She was looking good, man. It was looking like it was going to be a long night for Mackenzie, but it just shows you, man, one little slip up. Hannah had a point when she was on top of her that she could have backed out. She could have backed away and brought that fight back to defeat. In hindsight, I know it's 2020.
Yeah.
That's where she made the critical error of just going back and try that open guard. And maybe she couldn't get clinched up in an open guard. Beautiful, beautiful finish by Mackenzie.
And Matt, sorry to interrupt you. Interesting fact, that was the first time in the history of women's MMA, or for UFC at least, that there was a submission victory with a leg technique.
First leg lock submission in women's MMA history in the UFC. That is so wild. Congrats, Mackenzie Dern.
Yeah, that was really, really, she looked great. And I know that she probably feels good about that after a couple of the issues with weight. I'm sure she's very, very happy that that went as well as it did.
Man, let me tell you, I was so impressed. Go ahead, Jimmy. What else do we have? We talked about Augusto Sakai.
You took Sakai and you were right, second round stoppage. I took Ivanov by second round stoppage and I was ferociously incorrect.
Oh, you're trying to tell me right now.
Yeah.
That with my Mackenzie Dern pick with the first round submission, that was on the money. And you're also telling me, if I'm not mistaken, I don't want to draw this out. I am a little bit.
Sure.
That I hit it on the head. Sakai, second round stoppage. So I got those.
No. It was a split decision.
Oh, I picked second round stoppage. Oh, shit.
You won, though. You did get that.
Let's cut this out of the whole thing.
No, we can leave this part in. And the Roberts fight, Roosevelt Roberts against Brock Weaver. You are correct. Because I picked Roberts by decision. Oh, that's right. You picked Weaver by decision. So I had the right fighter, but I had the wrong method. I think it was a really good choke.
It's a rough night for us, Jimmy.
We did not do well.
Rough night for us. But you know what?
We're terrible.
I don't care what I'm like.
No.
I don't care when I'm wrong when it's a good fight and stuff.
Sure.
I don't care. I just like to enjoy it. I enjoy. You know what I like to do? I like to see Mackenzie Dern deal with some adversity, and then get a freaking knee bar. That's what I like to see.
I like to see that as well. That
not was just because I picked this first round sub, but yeah. I'm saying I get excited. I jump off the couch, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Like a maniac.
You do.
All right. I get so happy. And I'm so impressed with Caitlin, with her fight. And
she was that to me was the highlight of the night, was how dominant she was. It was really nice to see, because we like her so much. I was happy. Not that she won, but she made a real statement. And they even pointed out, what better way to get back at Valentina than by such a dominating, fight over her sister.
You know, it's I almost predicted when we had Caitlin on, I was like, it's a dream for you to be in this fight, to be just mounted on it, looking through the cage saying, you made me do this. I said that shit and pretty much went down like that. I couldn't believe how she just looked like a jiu-jitsu fighter. Props to John Danner too, because you know she trains at the Hensel Gracie Academy, which she's been trying to get you down to forever.
I know.
She trains with my buddy, Jedi John Danner, or Sith. He's a little dark. All right, Jimmy, what else?
I know you're good, man. This was a fun one. This was a fun one.
Jimmy, guess what I'm turning tomorrow?
43.
You did that on purpose.
46.
46 years old, Jimmy. Ah. I wish there was a boo button I could hit. Because now we got to start. Dude, even 45, you could still say, hey, if you're right in the middle. But now I got to, if anybody has 46, you might as well just say 50.
Yeah.
Gotta round it up.
Yeah.
Is that true, Jimmy?
Well, I mean, I would say I said 50 when I was like 49 and 48 because it was easier. Yeah. This way you get used to saying it. So when you hit 50, it's not that bad.
Jimmy, I think you're looking at, I'm going to be like, if I get to be that old, I will be, I don't see me maturing that much more. I mean, I'm mature. I handle my business. Husband, father, I do the right thing. Yeah. You do think I'm going to one day say, you know what? This VH, this VR stuff, video games, a little childish. You see me doing that anytime soon?
No.
Jimmy. All right, listen, you want to give me a happy birthday in advance?
When's your birthday?
It's kind of sad that I'm telling you to give me a happy birthday.
Happy birthday, but I'd rather give you a belated one on Wednesday.
You're going to say
a belated one on Wednesday is
Jimmy, you're the best, Jimmy. Listen to me. I will FaceTime you later.
Yes.
Thank you for having such a... Thank you for having patience with me, Jimmy.
Oh, this was fun.
Yeah, you use a Sam Roberts. Listen, speaking of childish shit, he's into that fucking WWE.
He's into wrestling. Yeah, Sam is a man child.
That you hang out with two man childs all day.
Yes, I do.
Who's... If you had to say, which one's more of a man child? Don't think about it for a
Hard
second.
Hard to say. I'd have to think that over, because both of you have your adult qualities too.
Yes. That's true. Which one's a Hall of Famer? All right, Jimmy, listen.
Great point.
You're the best, you. Jimmy. I miss you already. I will see you in a couple days.
All right, have a good night, buddy. See you
Take
soon.
Take care, Jimmy. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye. Thank you.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.